And you are listening to The Daily Gurr on 100.3 FM CKMS in Waterloo, Ontario. Soundfm.ca on the web. We are broadcasting from the heart of the occupied Haldimand Tract, Haudenosaunee territory of the Six Nations of the Grand River. Grand River Radical Radio is a project of the Grand River Media Collective. Visit us on our website at grandrivermc.ca. The Daily Gurr is supported by LSPIRG, WPIRG, and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. My name is Stefan Riley, and I will be your host today and each Wednesday hereafter, focusing on immigrant and labor justice. We begin today with the Daily Gurr headlines. Seasonal migrant workers stripped of parental benefits. Ottawa has eliminated special parental, maternal, and compassionate benefits, one of the few benefits seasonal migrant workers are able to access. It is estimated that $3.4 million is contributed by foreign migrant workers annually to Canada's employment insurance system. Foreign migrant workers have been paying into the system since 1996, but only started receiving some benefits in 2002. According to Chris Ramsarup of Justice for Migrant Workers, these workers have been subsidizing Canada's EI fund, yet ineligible to receive full benefits. Now they are being completely stripped away from the few special benefits they were able to get. As a result, the 30,000 migrant workers employed under the Seasonal Agricultural Workers Program can no longer take leave and collect a fraction of wages while caring for their newborns or sick children, said Ramsarup. The United Food and Commercial Workers Canada called the changes another attack on migrant workers' rights after Ottawa introduced new regulations earlier in 2012, allowing corporate Canada to pay migrant workers 15% less. Junior Sylvester, a migrant farm worker from Trinidad, stated, "All of us are still paying into Canada's EI system, but we are not allowed to collect any of the benefit we help contribute to. Canadian workers can access the special benefits and spend time with their children, but how about our children back home? To begin to exclude one group of workers from protections and entitlements under our social safety net can lead to the dismantling of our income security system for all workers," said Ramsarup. In other immigration news, a human smuggling ring in Ontario has been revealed. Canadian police and border officials have detained 30 people, most of whom are of Roma ethnic background. Public Safety Minister Vic Toews has designated the border crossing as irregular arrivals, triggering a new provision of the Immigration and Refugee Protection Act that allows detention for irregular or mass arrivals. Of the 85 people who crossed the border last February, 35 were children and thus not subject to mandatory detention. Out of the 40 located so far, 30 have been detained. The 85 migrants traveled from Romania into Mexico and survived crossing the Mexico-US border illegally, then drove to Canada. Their struggle for a better life is further complicated by dealing with unpredictable smugglers, whom often take advantage of their vulnerable situation. Immigration Minister Jason Kenney has frequently cited the Roma as an example of bogus refugee claimants because they come from European Union countries, Western democracies. He points out, but seek asylum in Canada. This obviously shows his complete ignorance to the discrimination faced by Roma migrants throughout Europe. Peter Scholler, a director of the Refugee Forum at the University of Ottawa and a member of the Canadian Association of Refugee Lawyers, says, "What we are looking at here is people who may very well be valid refugee claimants who will be in jail for more than 6 months. People who may very well be victims of discrimination, if not prosecution, and they will have to prove those refugee claims while they are in prison," he said. Liberal leader Bob Rae, speaking of the mass detention, stated that we have, under international laws, under our own law, under the Charter of Rights and Freedoms, the obligation that we have is to treat each case as an individual case and not to simply lump people together as a group. In an email to CBC, Janet Dench of the Canadian Council of Refugees said the government is creating a two-tier refugee system. The measures mean that even those found to be refugees are punished for 5 years, no permanent residence, no family reunification, no right to travel. Dench also wrote that basic charter and international human rights obligations are being violated by this designation. Days of action occurred in 8 cities across the country on December 9th and 10th to demand freedom for all security certificate detainees and an end to detentions. Idle No More rallies sprout across Canada, invigorating grassroots. Thousands of people across Canada took to the streets for International Human Rights Day yesterday, December 10th, launching a grassroots effort for native rights and recognition in the face of controversial federal budget legislation. At the root of Idle No More is a request for acts of solidarity against governments and industries that use legislation and disregard free, prior, and informed consent to further their agendas in the name of profit and progress, ignoring the natural law to live as one with Mother Earth. Rallies took place in several dozen cities, towns, and reserves in most provinces across the country as the loosely organized protests spread. Demonstrators say the ominous bill, Bill C-45, being voted on this week by the conservative federal government, as well as other changes to the Indian Act, were undertaken without consulting Indigenous leaders and will drastically lower the threshold of consent for communities to designate or surrender lands, as well as drastically lowering environmental protection for waterways. The Assembly of First Nations released a statement alleging the reforms could go even further, toward the outright termination of Aboriginal rights altogether. The Cost Crunchy rallies came the same day as the announcement of a hunger strike by Attawapiskat First Nation Chief Teresa Spence. The federal government seized financial control over her reserve last winter after she declared a state of emergency over housing conditions and poverty. For more information on the Idle No More movement, visit www.idlenomore.ca. Bill C-309 and its discontents. On October 31, 2012, Parliament voted to approve Bill C-309, an amendment to Section 65 of the Canadian Criminal Code, also known as the Preventing Persons from Concealing Their Identity During Riots and Unlawful Assemblies Act. The bill will establish two new criminal offenses, each with alarmingly harsh sentencing provisions. Once Bill C-309 becomes law, individuals charged with wearing a mask or other disguise while participating in a riot, defined as an unlawful assembly that has begun to disturb the peace, will face an indictable offense carrying a maximum sentence of 10 years. Those charged with concealing their identity while participating in an unlawful assembly could face either an indictable offense carrying a maximum sentence of 5 years or a less serious summary offense. The crime of rioting currently carries a maximum 2-year sentence, whereas participation in an unlawful assembly is a basic summary offense. Recent conservative efforts, such as C-309, are best understood as part of a massive expansion of this country's prison-industrial complex, and a shift towards a more Americanized system of incarceration, where prisons play the important role of both a lucrative site of corporate profit and a vital tool of state control. For an in-depth analysis of what Bill C-309 means to anti-authoritarians, visit linchpin.ca and look for the Bill C-309 and its discontents article. Canadian immigration changes force women to stay with sponsoring spouse for 2 years. As of October 25, 2012, a new regulation imposes a 2-year condition on all permanent residents who come to Canada as a sponsored spouse. The regulation applies to all sponsored spouses who at the time of the sponsorship application have resided for 2 years or less with their sponsors and do not have any children in common. Once they arrive in Canada, the sponsored spouse must continue to cohabit with her sponsor in a conjugal relationship for at least 2 years or risk losing her permanent resident status and ultimately be deported. Women's rights advocates and immigration organizations warned Federal Immigration Minister Jason Kenney that this rule would endanger the lives of women in abusive relationships, many of whom would be too ashamed and too afraid to speak out for fear of losing their immigration status. The risk of deportation adds to the already enormous barriers faced by abused sponsored immigrant women. Gabrielle Nadeau-Dubois sentenced to 120 hours community service. The former student leader and spokesperson for CLASS was found guilty in November when Justice Denise Jacques ruled he had incited protesters to ignore court orders. Jacques ruled that Nadeau-Dubois encouraged protesters to violate those injunctions with statements he made during an interview with Radio Canada on May 13, 2012. In a televised interview, Nadeau-Dubois' exact words were, "I think that it is completely legitimate for students to undertake the means necessary to respect the democratic choice to strike. It's completely regrettable that a minority of students are using the courts to go around decisions that were made collectively. If students need to form picket lines to ensure their strike votes are respected, we think that's completely legitimate." After being found guilty, Nadeau-Dubois said he would appeal the verdict and has raised more than $100,000 from supporters for his legal challenge. Nadeau-Dubois contends that the ruling creates a precedent against spokespeople for organizations. Kill Bill 115. This past Monday, Ontario's teachers, education workers, and students turned up the heat on the Liberal minority government and Bill 115, which imposes a concessionary bargaining agenda on teachers' unions and the school boards, and allows the cabinet to change tentative agreements and stop strikes without even legislative oversight. Beginning on December 10th, in Avon, Maitland, and Northeast districts, the Elementary Teachers Federation of Ontario, ETFO, began their series of one-day district-wide strikes. On the same day, the Ontario Secondary Schools Teachers Federation, OSSTF, implemented a coordinated Work to Rule campaign, with volunteer extracurricular activities coming to an end and teachers showing up 15 minutes before classes start and leaving 15 minutes after they end. Furthermore, students across high schools in Ontario walked out of class and also partook in other planned actions, while students in some elementary schools participated in sit-down strikes. It is important to note that the students have stepped out of the prevailing political narratives and have begun speaking out for themselves, however contradictory at times. We'll feature more on this issue after a brief musical interlude.
The rank and file. Go get organized!
And we are back. You just heard the Redskins with their song Go Get Organized right here on 100.3 FM CKMS Waterloo, Ontario. Again, you are listening to the Immigrant and Labor Justice edition of the Daily Gur. My name is Stefan Rally, and we are now moving into the feature portion of our broadcast. Today, we provide more background on the teachers and education situation in Ontario and Canada. I would like to borrow from the Toronto Industrial Workers of the World, whose recent publication entitled Classroom appeared in early December of this year. You can read or download a copy of the newsletter at www.torontoiww.wordpress.com. I will first read from the article entitled Austerity, Class War, and Classrooms: Why We Need Community Unionism. In recent times, organized labor has been ineffective in rallying its membership and the broader working class community against the continued assault on working people through the capitalist austerity agenda. Downloading the costs of the 2008 economic crisis via lower wages and cuts to public services. More urgently, the government is attempting to make strikes illegal and to erode our collective bargaining rights. The government of Ontario has imposed a public sector wage freeze for the next 2 years and shrunk the legal number of sick days from 20 to 10, effectively seeking to cut a benefit that allowed workers to collect unclaimed sick days for a retirement payout up to $46,000. Predictably, the union's official position has been to essentially hold the line on benefits. These demands are, by their nature, insular to the concerns of its membership and aren't likely to inspire support in non-unionized workers who depend on services staffed by public sector trade unions. One way of combating the cynicism and disconnectedness of the wider working class from the struggles of organized labor is for unions to take a more combative perspective on the capitalist crisis and its effects in restructuring the public sector services gained by the post-war generation. This should mean the building of solidarity unionism, raising the demands of the community, and fighting for the defense of the public education system. This is especially critical, given that the Drummond Report on Education details cuts to full-day kindergarten, acting as a buffer for childcare and education support staff, and calls for the introduction of de facto tuition fees for high school students taking extra courses. These attacks against the public education system need to be at the forefront of demands made by our unions that seeks to legitimize themselves in the eyes of working people in Ontario by taking up the role of defending our class and classrooms. What's needed today for today's labor movement is to distance itself from unsustainable traditional trade union practices. It should also recognize that political solutions in the social democratic left have resulted in little by way of sustainable gains for working people. It's unclear what social democratic parties can do to protect working people from a globalized capitalist environment that will likely see capitalists divest assets needed to fund the coffers of the state to provide public services. Even when the left wins by the electoral means, parties are under enormous pressure to cede their social democratic aspirations to accommodate the needs of capitalism. A fighting labor movement with ambitions to win wider class solidarity must not fall into the trap of social democracy or liberalism, relegating our fellow workers to act as little more than the foot soldiers of the so-called progressive electoral machine. We cannot shortcut class solidarity through these electoral vehicles, but rather we should create an organic united front of our class and our unions through collective community demands. Change will not be sustained through the ballot box, but by establishing meaningful relations between our labor movement and the working class through the slogan of community demands and class defense. And that concludes the article Austerity, Class War, and Classrooms: Why We Need Community Unionism. The Toronto IWW also published an interview with C. Hewitt White, a Toronto-based teacher and member of the Ontario Secondary School Teachers Federation, OSSTF, about the ongoing education sector strike. Her views are her own and do not necessarily represent those of OSSTF. To read the full interview, please visit torontoiww.wordpress.com. The interview starts by asking, "I understand that OSSTF has been escalating its strike actions. Why is this happening?" And C. Hewitt White responds, "The Toronto District of OSSTF started our official legal strike action on Monday, November 12th. Many other districts have joined in since then. In Toronto, we are striking in response to two levels of attack, local and provincial. At the local level, school boards usually seek an increase in on-call supervision every round of bargaining. This is a crass cost-saving measure. It costs less than hiring occasional teachers, with nasty consequences. For example, teachers have less time for preparation during their workday, so they intensify their prep work in the limited time they have, work longer hours, or come to class less prepared. Students clearly don't benefit from increasing on-calls. The issue that everyone has been hearing about is the provincial attack. In early spring of this year, the government announced that it would cut education funding for a two-year period of restraint and that it would enforce cuts through legislation if the education unions did not accept them. In the months that followed, negotiations crumbled between the government and all unions, save for the Ontario English Catholic Teachers Association, OECTA, which signed a Memorandum of Understanding, MOU, with the government in July, behind the backs of its members and allied unions. Minister of Education Laurel Broughton introduced Bill 115 in August, and it was passed by provincial legislature on September 11th. Bill 115 imposed terms and conditions on OSSTF members retroactive to September 1st, identical to the terms and conditions in the OECTA MOU, which are a two-year wage freeze, a 97-day salary grid movement freeze for teachers who have been teaching less than 10 years, cutting our sick days from 20 to 10, and deleting accrued sick days, as well as the ability to cash out a percentage of accrued sick day value upon retirement. Furthermore, Bill 115 stipulates that its measures trump existing law. It cannot be found by arbitrators or courts to be in contravention of the Ontario Labour Reactions Act, Employment Standards Act, or Ontario Human Rights Code, even though it contravenes all of these. Effectively, collective bargaining no longer exists for OSSTF, QP, and ETFO members affected by the bill because it is hamstrung by austerity parameters and the Minister of Education has ultimate say over our agreements. Classroom follows up their first question with, why has OSSTF chosen to strike in response? What sorts of actions are taking place? C. Hewitt-White responds, as far as I can understand from OSSTF communications and discussions with my coworkers, our strike action is a tool designed to put pressure on our local boards to stop their attempts to increase on-calls and to dismantle our contract. But we are also putting pressure on the province to allow us to negotiate beyond the parameters of Bill 115. However, union members have reason to suspect that our current negotiations are aiming for contracts that would be approved by the Minister of Education on the basis of being substantially identical to the entirely concessionary and undemocratic agreement that OECTA leadership signed. Our current negotiations basically accepts austerity measures, but tries to implement them on the union leadership's own terms. For example, we know that OSSTF already in the spring offered a general wage freeze in exchange for not freezing newer teachers' movement up the salary grid and offered to take on the unfunded liabilities of members' benefits plans. The union decided on a strike strategy that would have little to no impact on students. Teachers are continuing to provide teaching-related labor but are withholding administrative labor. We are not attending meetings with administrators and we are also not doing parent-teacher interviews after school hours. Contrary to media reports, this is not a work-to-rule action and we have not collectively withdrawn extracurriculars, though some individual elementary teachers have. We are continuing to mark, prep, teach, offer extra help outside of class time, contact parents during our workday, informally monitor student behavior in the hallways, and supervise extracurriculars. Classroom also asks, what do you think that the union is capable of accomplishing? Hewitt-White responds, the union is a wealthy and well-oiled political machine that has helped many Liberals and NDP candidates to win their seats in Parliament. In the past, at both the provincial and local levels, OSSTF has mobilized tons of its members to work on election campaigns, to attend rallies, and to attend our provincial conventions. OSSTF has the means to mount an intense fight back outside of the courtroom and beyond the negotiating table, but lacks the political will to do so. For instance, OSSTF could run train-the-trainer sessions for door-to-door campaigning, allowing us to engage directly with the public about how Bill 115 sets an anti-democratic precedent for all workers. It could hold public assemblies. it could publish literature for the general public about how education workers' unions have won improvements for the school system through the process of collective bargaining that has come under attack. It could hold educational events that bring workers from the three main education unions in Ontario together. In short, it could use organizing methods to build broad support for our case and against Bill 115. Right now, rank-and-file members are trying out these methods because official union bodies are refusing to. Broad education and engagement now will help us mobilize beyond December 31st, when Bill 115 will come into full effect and strikes and lockouts will be banned. For education workers, what I mean by mobilization is illegal labor action, like a full walkout. Workers are scared of wildcat action because of fines and disciplinary action. They also lack confidence, knowledge, and skills. And union leaders are directly to blame for this by having failed to direct resources to rank-and-file education or provide training over a period of many years. The unions have launched a legal challenge to Bill 115 that experts agree will win, but it will take from 3 to 6 years to finalize the case. That's 3 to 6 years of destructive ripple effects throughout the public sector, of wages lost, of people losing income when they are sick. Some union officials are hoping that Liberal leader contenders like former Ministers of Education Kathleen Wynne and Gerald Kennedy will make amendments to OSSTF and repeal the bill if elected. I think this is redundantly naive. We are facing a situation in which there are a few ways to overturn Bill 115 in the next year, other than by creating a situation in which the public is mobilized and students, parents, and workers take to the streets. This creates the same kind of pressure and purposeful chaos that a strike does. It disrupts business as usual and shifts consensus, as we saw happen in Quebec last spring. And that was the end of an interview with C. Hewitt White, a Toronto-based teacher and member of the Ontario Secondary School Teachers Federation, about the ongoing education sector strike. You can read the full interview at torontoiww.wordpress.com. Thank you for listening to The Daily GRR. Today's program was edited and produced by Stefan Riley. For previous broadcasts, useful links, and upcoming events, please visit grandrivermc.ca. The Daily GRR is broadcast Monday to Friday, 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. on 100.3 CKMS Waterloo.